Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. This is the Roguecast for Wednesday, February 18th, number 49.
Wow, we're closing in.
That's right. Next week is the big 50th anniversary.
When it happens, we die, right?
No.
I never signed on to that.
No. There is no suicide pact or murder pact.
You'll like it. I don't. They have a suicide pact.
Next week will be
pact after.
Sure, we'll get a Lazarus pit.
Next week will be our 50th show, and we will have some a little bit of special stuff on there. And but for this time, it's just your everyday specialness.
That's right.
That's right.
The magic of us.
So we start off with our usual housekeeping. Ladies' night is on March 9th, Monday, March 9th. That is going to be at Outback Steakhouse. Our next Reading with Rogues is Astro City, Life in the Big City, on Tuesday, March 10th at BJ's Brewhouse. And then our Gaming with Rogues is going to be on March 16th. That's also a Monday. And that is going to be Ticket to Ride over at BJ's Brewhouse.
Ticket to Ride is a lot of fun.
Yeah. This week, the inventory sale is still running. You got a few more weeks to catch on to it. Catch a few graphic novels, games, all that kind of thing. It is 55% plus 2D6 discount.
Yep, meaning you're going to end up with between 57 and 67%
That's
off.
Right. That's a pretty good amount.
Dang.
Also, in about 3 weeks, Staple will be hitting us for the year. Staple, as always, is the independent media show we've been co-sponsoring for like 10 years now. There's going to be a huge lineup of guests, especially sort of a lot of women guests this year. Two parts of the team of Lumberjanes,
yep.
Babstar, who does Batgirl, which we'll be talking about a little later.
Jess Fink,
who does really awesome graphic novels.
Yep.
Kate Leth, one of Comic Alliance's editors, Janelle Esselin. I probably butchered that name. Really? She didn't listen to the show. It's all
nice
right.
Nice job, Brandy.
But Staple will be the first weekend in March, the 6th and 7th. A lot of fun. We'll be out there. And, I'll be out there. I don't know if anybody else is going to be around.
I'm going to try and make it out.
I'm going to show up.
But it should be fun. That's our housekeeping. So we'll move on to sort of the stuff we're talking about for this
Yay.
Week. So, Dave, you noticed that there was going to be a we knew there were love letters coming. Love letters is one of these popular games.
Yes. And yet I haven't played it yet. I believe of the three of us, Nick is the only person who's played it.
Nick played Love Letter. I have played Lost Legacy, the Starship, which is the space variant of.
And I imagine some of our listeners have played it, but this is a... the original Love Letter is a small game. It's, what is it, like probably $10?
I think it's like 20 cards, right?
It's $10 for 16 cards.
Yeah, it's really small.
Whole game.
Yep. And the basic premise of the game, which they have expanded, they've done a lot of other versions of it. But the original one was like supposed to be sort of like in a court in Victorian times. And your suitor's trying to get your love letter to the fair princess or
right.
whatever. And then they've done versions that have like a sci-fi theme.
Yeah.
And Legend of the Five Rings, which
Legend
is the
five
sort of
rings.
Magic Japanese.
Yeah, I believe it was originally was like a Chinese game, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it's Japanese.
Japanese, okay. And
there's the Letters to Santa variant.
That's yep. right, Letters to Santa.
But it's kind of cool that the rules for this can be mapped onto sort of whatever genre you want, and which leads us to the new version.
Right, which is a Batman. What's the full title of it?
Love Letter. It's something about Arkham City.
Right,
or
like
Arkham
Escape
Asylum.
From Arkham
yeah,
or something like
yeah.
that. So is Batman trying to contain a breakout at Arkham Asylum? It is pretty crazy to imagine that it went from Love Letter to Arkham Asylum, and yet.
Right. There's also going to be a Hobbit version.
Right.
Same time.
Yeah.
And it seems like they always, like, you know, the cards look really nice. It's a game that gather plays, Nick, in, like, you know, like 10 minutes or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's played in rounds, so depending on how many rounds you go to win.
Okay, sort of more like traditional card games where you can kind of decide, you know, first person to 50 or
yeah,
whatever.
But a round lasts, like, between 3 and 4 minutes. So
yeah.
It's fairly quick-paced.
Yeah. What I want to do is I want you need to bring Love Letter to whatever one of our get-togethers.
I shall
so
do
we
this.
Can play the core one. And then I think I definitely want to play the Batman one when it comes out. Maybe some of the others in the meantime, but I want to play the original first.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Or that is to say, the original in America. The original Japanese one,
it's the same game, it's just translated.
Right, that's right. It was meant to be, like I think, like in the Edo period, and, you know, it was... what do you call it? Like bamboo brush illustrations. But it was still about, like, courting a princess of that
yeah.
era.
Yeah,
oh, okay. There's been some casting news.
Yes.
They have cast their Rick Flag for Suicide Squad, and that is Joel Kinnaman.
Yeah. Who that?
Who you may know as the latest RoboCop.
Yeah.
But I remember from The Killing, a show I didn't much like, but I thought he was really good in it. I think he's going to make a good Rick Flag.
No, I think so.
Is he? Okay, because I would kind of assume anybody who was like in the new RoboCop would suck.
No, no. Michael he's really good.
Michael Keaton was in the new
RoboCop, sir. Samuel Jackson was in the new RoboCop.
He needs the money
for
the drugs.
Maybe Joel Kinnaman needed the money.
No, he was actually really good in RoboCop. He was a bright spot.
Okay, so he himself was all right. Yeah, the movie was just kind of meh.
Yeah, it was mediocre.
I've never seen the movie.
But that's good, because this Rick Flag role has been, like, passed around like a hat, and...
Well, and Tom Hardy was great casting, and I was disappointed to lose him.
Yeah. He was the only one. They wanted Jake Gyllenhaal, but Jake Gyllenhaal was like, no,
Gyllenhaal would have been bad casting for this, I think.
I like him as an actor. I think he probably could have pulled it off, but he doesn't quite seem right.
You need to see Nightwatch, and then you...
All right, fair enough.
You know, I see, from the trailers of that, he looked like he had the intensity down, but he still didn't seem like Rick Flag.
You need a little bulk. And that's one thing I worry about Joel Kinnaman, is that when I saw him, he was a scraggly little dude. But I gather he bulked up a bit for RoboCop, yeah, so...
It'll all be CG.
CG bulk?
Muscles. Yeah.
Like the Rob Liefeld Captain America?
Yes.
Just walks onto the set.
There's also some Deadpool casting, which I know Dave and I are... anxiously watching the Deadpool movie. That's cannot right. wait.
I am the Deadpool fan number one.
And I'm number zero.
1,030,000 zillion thousand is about where I am in the rating.
It sort of started last week when Ryan Reynolds tweeted a picture of the Deadpool costume.
Right.
And then...
Was that the same one that he did the promo thing with, Nick? You know, the little proof of concept from a few months ago?
Yeah, that was CG. This one was sort of... It was pink, which was weird. Because I guess they're going to do some computer mapping.
I thought I saw, but I guess I thought I saw this somewhere, and I thought it was red. Maybe somebody had color corrected it.
Do you guys remember when Sean Young really wanted to be Catwoman?
No, I only remember that she did something crazy,
and that she went on like Letterman dressed up as Catwoman and acted all crazy.
I never saw it, but I did hear the story.
I'm just wondering: is it possible there's no Deadpool movie, and Ryan Reynolds
is just a madman?
Yeah. I'm just saying. I'm just throwing it out there.
You know what would be the best? If he went on Letterman in a Catwoman costume and acted real crazy.
And just said chimichanga a lot?
Yeah. But, chimichanga, real!
Wow. But in the casting news, it was revealed this week that Gina Carano from Haywire and Fast and the Furious 6 is going to be playing a character named Angel Dust, which I'm not super familiar with. I did a quick look up of her, and apparently she was a Morlock mutant. We don't know.
And also,
it is rumored that Daniel Cudmore is going to reprise his role as Colossus.
Now, Colossus is a weird fit for a Deadpool movie.
You know, they could have him in as kind of the straight man, sort of in the same role that Cable was in Deadpool.
I guess, yeah.
Colossus. Although, you know...
why don't they just use Cable?
I honestly feel like they should go ahead and use Cable, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's going to be in their Cable and X-Force movie.
And maybe because everybody always sort of felt like Colossus was super cool in his one or two moments in X2, but never got enough to do.
Yeah.
Like, it does seem weird to me.
He got more of a role in X3, but it wasn't good.
Yeah, yeah.
But it does seem like a slightly weird call.
It does.
Yeah.
But not the craziest thing I've heard.
No.
Will you guys be going to see the Deadpool movie?
Nope.
It seems unlikely.
Nick, you're the lone Deadpool lover in this room.
I mean, I thought you were going to say in the world, and I'm like, I don't think that's true.
Not in the world, no.
I'll go see it by myself.
He is legion.
Yeah.
I'll take my wife.
Poor boy.
We also heard tell of this is just as we were starting to record, there was a new Avatar series that Alan Moore is writing, making two series that Alan Moore is writing for Avatar. Right.
What's it called? Providence?
Providence, number one.
You know, I think I had heard about this at some point because it rang a bell when Nick...
Yeah, we actually had somebody requesting it already.
Okay, so the word is out there, but...
it's him and artist Jason Burroughs doing a sort of, what?
Prequel sequel, they said.
Prequel sequel to Dave's favorite comic book in all the world, Neonomicon.
It's true. Neonomicon is the Alan Moore's spin on Lovecraftian weirdness. And I have endorsed this book before.
Yep.
It has my staff pick on it.
Yep.
It sells quite often, and I always feel a tinge of guilt whenever it sells.
Because it is dark, man.
It is of an extreme nature.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you say it's one of
Alan Moore's best recent work? I find it's one of his most approachable ones. Like, I don't know, I haven't read that much Alan Moore lately, but I feel it's more approachable than his League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I don't know if it's necessarily better, but It's nobody's complained about it.
Yeah.
Because it's doing the miniseries of Crossed 100, which I think is just a six-issue mini.
Oh, okay. Like
And they're saying this is an ongoing. I don't know what...
Well, then he'll probably write the first six issues, and then they'll give it somebody else like they always do with... Jonathan Hickman's God is Dead and all the other books. That's always, although, they get the big name readers, writers for...
I'm trying to recall, has Ward generally done that lately?
Not that I know of. I've never seen him hand it off to another writer.
Huh.
Yeah.
He'll come on to like, another person's book.
I feel like,
book.
He did some stuff with, like an Image and stuff like that,
Well, he came on to God is Dead and wrote a two-issue story and then kind of left. But
he's usually not one of these guys who kicks off a book for other people to take over.
I don't know.
I guess we'll find out.
We'll see.
But anyway, I am curious. He explored some very dark territory, but it did sort of end on a cliffhanger. So we'll see if he picks up immediately after that.
Yeah. Finally, Nick, Toy Fair news.
Oh, my God. New York Toy Fair happened this past weekend, and my wallet cried. mainly due to the fact that there are so many toys that are coming out that look amazing. Mainly for me, I'm starting to kind of have to whittle down what I'm buying. So the Marvel Legends are definitely kicking it in high gear this year with like...
Whittle down? You picked up Sentry today, sir.
Hey.
Your definition of whittling and my definition are very different.
You have to buy Sentry in order to get a piece of Odin. Odin must be bought.
Randy, I don't know if you saw the Odin figure, but it's actually pretty cool.
Oh, it's a great figure, yeah.
They've never done an
Hawkeye figure, which was super awesome.
Yeah.
They've never done an Odin figure, and I have to go find little ravens to put on his shoulder because I want. What are the
Hunan and Mugen, or something like that?
Yeah, that is thought and memory.
Yeah,
just because that's cool, and I'm sad that they didn't include those. Still, there's like four different waves of Marvel Legends coming out this year, and they're all great. We're getting like weird characters like Misty Knight, and
the Misty Knight figure looks great.
Blizzard, of all people.
Yeah, sure.
Tiger Shark.
Yep.
Is that out of curiosity? Is Blizzard in his old school costume?
Yeah, his
kind of blue and white thing.
Yep, blue and white. Yeah. Just very traditional, but fun superhero, supervillain
getup.
But not only Marvel Legends, there were, Jurassic Park with Jurassic World announced all their toys, which, if you bought the Jurassic Park toys of old, they look very similar in a lot of ways.
I noticed they even had that little chunk of dino meat steak taken that you can take out.
I don't know what this was. I mean, it's just they want to just, for old time's sake, they wanted to include
it. It's a slightly, it's always seemed a little slightly weirdly gory.
I have this T-Rex, but there's a piece of him missing.
But that's like, you wouldn't sell a Tauntaun figure that you couldn't slit open in the belly.
Star Wars Black is actually releasing a Tauntaun figure with a Han Solo figure.
Nice.
But you cannot slice it.
But not
belly.
What? I'm gonna.
Well, I'm sure.
Just saying, kids will fight their dinosaurs without a removable steak from their sides.
I guess. Where's the fun in that?
There's also Transformers, which I thought was kind of a... not to be mean, but sort of a dead property in a lot of ways, are bringing things back with their line called the Combiner Wars. They've already started releasing some of them in places in retail markets. So, like, you're getting a full-fledged Silver Bowl. I mean, the
Aerial Bots.
Aerial Bots, all the different Aerial Bots combining.
I really wanted those as a kid.
Yeah.
They're also doing another one based off of, like, a Power Masters Optimus Prime.
But we know what the one you want.
Oh, God, the big release is Devastator.
The first Combiner.
And
he always had, like, the coolest name, too.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Well, because that was the ultimate weapon at that point. Like,
I mean,
the Constructicons were suddenly really dangerous.
I mean, Superion, it's an okay name.
Yeah.
Devastator. Come on.
Yeah, we know which one is more metal of the two.
Unfortunately, this is a $150 box set.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
But it comes with all six robots that are actually in their Voyager size. So Voyager is their second to biggest class. So they've got, like, I forget, Legends, Voyager, and then, like, their leader class.
And life size.
And life size.
And this thing combines to a good 18 inches tall. That is what they have said. Hmm. And that is an enormous Devastator figure that I have to have.
Nick, the individual vehicles roughly comparable to, like, what I think of as a traditional Transformers vehicle?
When we were kids?
Yeah, about that size. They're a little bit bigger. They're going to be bigger than that.
Okay. Because I was going to say, like, the original Constructicons were notably smaller than the regular.
Yeah, so they could form Devastator.
These are going to be out of scale, or in scale, compared to what they should be now.
Can you name the Constructicons?
There have been various versions over there.
Oh, okay.
Old school.
Mixmaster, Long Haul, Hook, Scrapper?
Scrapyard, I believe, is
Scrapper,
one. Yep.
And Bone Crusher.
That's right. Yeah.
And I can't remember the last one.
I thought there was only five, but I don't remember.
Sassy Pants.
The funny thing is, Nick, you could have just made up any names and I wouldn't have known.
I only had a few of them as a kid, but I always wanted Devastator. I never had the full thing.
I didn't have the full Devastator
either. My friend, of course, across the street, and his parents bought him everything he wanted, had it, and I was always very sad. But I will soon have a Devastator that rivals any other Devastator and will destroy all.
I have to mention, I don't keep that up close on the toy news stuff, but I saw that they're bringing back GoBots.
Yeah.
Like a superior GoBot form.
I mean, it's insane. They're basically just doing GoBots in the superposable Transformers vein, and I'm like, did we really need Cyclon? And
nope, nobody needs that.
Well, you know, back in the day, did we really need, like, there was like 8 different Transformers ripoffs running concurrently.
Yeah.
There's money to be made, sir.
But, I mean, everything got announced this week. Masters of the Universe got their new line launched. You know.
Really?
There's Ghostbusters toys.
What's the deal with the Masters of the Universe one?
I mean, they're sort of doing a new line off to their Masters of the Universe that I forgot which toy company did it. But they
Is there a new cartoon or something?
I don't think so. It's just toys. And then we have DC Direct, which has made some pretty cool toys over the years, but I think they've sort of trumped themselves this year with releasing just...
I don't buy a ton of toys. The only thing I'm buying right now is the Batman Animated Series line.
And before we get any further, they announced a lot for the Batman Animated Series line.
But there's a lot in the DC Direct that I want. I don't think I'm going to buy most of them, but there's a lot in there that I was like, ooh,
you're talking
cool.
about the $500 Dr. Fate helmet, right?
Yes, that looked awesome.
It did look awesome.
I mean, I knew they were doing a Mother Box, and that was tempting enough.
Yeah, the Mother Box...
But they're.
Oh, I didn't see the Mother Box. That's pretty
cool. Yeah, we've already ordered that.
Yeah, we've ordered the Mother Box.
It actually is going to make the ping sound, too.
We'll have the ping sound.
Then there's, big Dr. Fate helmet. But the action figures, like, they're doing a Constantine statue that looks really cool.
Yeah, the Constantine statue. There's the Joker and Harley kissing.
The bombshells, that with the sort of homage to the end of World War II.
That looks fantastic.
The Harley Quinn, the new Gotham Garage statue.
Oh, yeah.
Those are so expensive, but man, that Harley Quinn on a bike looks really cool. Yeah. There's also there's a ton of different
on the bike.
They did. Yeah. There's a ton of Harley Quinn statues, including my favorite announcement of this and the ones that I might wind up pick up is the DC Icons line because they're sort of ditching some of the new 52 designs and going back. The Icons is sort of throughout time.
Yeah, I mean they are. So they do incorporate some of the new 52, but it's also using like Superman as the John Byrne era.
It's the classic version, so it's like Flash, but he's got a cosmic treadmill.
Yep.
And they're doing a Grell Green Arrow that I'm going to have to buy.
Yeah, that one's really nice.
It's put in Seattle.
Yes. They're doing a classic Harley Quinn. They're doing a black and white statue of the original Bruce Timm design for Harley Quinn.
I know, it's such a bizarre design.
I would like this for that classic Harley Quinn to sell really well and suggest that
they should bring it back.
They could just change it in the comic.
I like the idea. There's also there's an Arkham City line that looks really good. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of packs. There's a Arrow 3-pack that comes with Arrow, Diggle, and Felicity. And the Felicity figure looks great.
Yeah, it does. It does look really good.
Of course, the Batman Animated has the Phantasm Batman 2-pack and that Batmobile.
I think everyone saw the Phantasm and they're like, I have to buy that. Oh, it's a 2-pack. Okay, well, I'll
get
Batman.
Another Batman, yep.
yep. And then the $100 Batmobile.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care how much it is. That thing looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's going to have lights and sounds.
Yeah.
It actually will fit 2 action figures.
Yep.
I mean, truthfully, I'm not going to drive around my apartment, you know, making Batman sounds.
I don't believe you.
Well, sure, I might do it at some point. You never know. Of course, I'm going to do that. You won't do that. But, I mean, it just looks so awesome. The cockpit actually has, like, all the little
details
and things, and it's just like...
You know what? You could reenact was it Harlequinade or Harley's Holiday?
No, it was Harlequinade.
Where she teams up, Batman takes her on. And
she's riding the Batmobile.
Yep, and she's like, I want to listen to the radio. And she like hits like the, you know, turbo boost and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then they announced the action figures for animated series of Bane, Scarecrow, who else was
Mad
there?
Hatter.
Mad Hatter and Nightwing.
Yeah.
Finally. And I think those...
Yeah, it's... Comics Alliance has. We'll get one. I'm sure of it.
That they don't kind of put that out quicker. I mean, I know he's not like a fighting character.
Yeah.
But like this is sort of more for the adult collectors who love Alfred.
Yeah, Alfred and Commissioner Gordon are the two obvious missing ones. Yeah.
Are they going to do Bullock?
I don't know. We don't know. But
I'd be shocked if they didn't. They're doing some weird characters.
It seems like this line has done well for them.
Yeah, definitely Buzz has gotten them to the point where they're just going to...
Comics Alliance posted an article, which I'll link to, that had, I think, 82 pictures of the DC Direct stuff. And it is an impressive lineup that they got coming out. So,
well, like I said, it was an amazing Toy Fair, one of the better ones. I mean, I'm always sort of tuned in, but this one was quite good.
Yep.
Lots of fun stuff.
All right, that'll wrap up our news for the moment. We will be back in just a few seconds to talk comics for the week. All right, we are talking comics for Wednesday, February 18th, and I'm going to start. I'm just going to start right off.
Fine. Great. Do it. Come on, bring
no,
it.
No, Dave, not great. 8. It rhymes with great.
Oh, wow. That was a segue because the comic is actually entitled 8.
Yes. So it is 8 number 1, weirdly, not 8 number 8.
Right.
from Dark Horse Comics, with art and co-writing by Raphael Albuquerque, who you may remember from American Vampire.
Yeah.
Also one of the guys who did the original run on Blue Beetle.
Yep. You know, Randy, just at a glance at that cover and at some of the interior art, which is, of course, beautiful because it's Raphael Albuquerque.
Yep.
He has a certain, I don't want to say, it's not a monochromatic palette, but it's a limited color palette, and it looks really beautiful. Am I wrong, though? Does it not remind you of some of the design, especially, I'm just looking at the cover of the Parker novel, graphic novel?
Yeah, no, I can see that.
By Darwin Cook, one of the greats.
Yeah, it's a very, the color palette, I believe, is blue, yellow, and red.
But this is not hard-boiled crime, this is like sci-fi stuff, right?
Yeah, it's a guy who travels the future, and it starts sort of in media res, so you don't know. He doesn't have. He's lost his memory. He's trying to communicate with his time traveling home base. He is clearly maybe some kind of criminal or was pushed into this, and then winds up in this sort of post apocalyptic world. And there's some reveals about who he was after and what's going on. It takes a little while to get going, to be honest. But the first couple pages, I was like, oh, there's a lot of info to absorb, and I wasn't sure I was liking it. But when it got deeper in, and I saw where they were going with it, I thought there were some good character moments. And the artwork is just stunning.
I mean, yeah, the artwork is sort of the bread and butter. The reason.
If you like Gabriel Ba's stuff, if you've been liking American Vampire, you like the Umbrella Academy, definitely check this out. It is gorgeous to look at.
I will say also that the colors do mean things. There's a breakdown of what each color actually
means. That's right,
I wondered if that little key chart on the first on the inside cover meant something.
Oh, yeah, it is... denote different time frames throughout the book.
Okay, so that's cool. I want to say what it is.
Let's see. So it says, the past is green, the present is purple, the future is blue, the meld is something else entirely. And I believe what's happened here is that timelines have melted together, and they're sending him back to fix it.
Yep.
Interesting.
So, you know, the things are sort of just denoted by different colors.
So, for example, the screen he has on his wrist that he uses to communicate with them is green because he's communicating with the past.
Yes.
So I have a question.
Yep.
Much of the book seems to have that blue and pale orange like color palette.
Yeah.
Blue is future and
the meld
orange
is orange.
The meld.
Yeah.
So it seems like that is both the future and something blurry.
Yeah.
That's actually really cool. I like this.
There was it's a very interesting dynamic for the book, so I liked it quite a bit.
It's good. I definitely recommend it.
Maybe the it also just without having read it, I might call it the best looking book of the week.
Nick, what is
snazziest book of the week? I don't know.
Sexy time.
I have a contender here because I thought the art in this book was really good. My book is Silk Number 1 from the pages of Spider-Verse.
Yep. This is a character we've talked about recently because she has cropped up any number of times in Spider-Verse.
Yeah,
and Amazing Spider-Man
as well. Written by Robbie Thompson, who I actually don't know.
He is a guy from Supernatural.
Really?
If you read the editorial on the back.
Okay, well then, processing that and processing sort of some of the humor of the series and kind of snark makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And art by Stacey Lee, who, again, I don't know, but I really, really enjoy her artwork. It's very kinetic, and I don't quite know who she reminds me of.
I compare her to Babs Tarr a little bit.
A little bit.
But also Colleen Coover. What's that?
Is it definitely a woman?
Yes. Stacey Lee is a woman. Keech. No, it's Stacey Lee. It's a woman. Right.
Stacey Keach is drawing this. Yes.
And it's it reminds me a little bit of Babs Tarr. Also,
I mean, it's sort of the Babs Tarr Cameron Stewart style.
But also sort of Colleen.
But, you know, it's definitely removed from that too. It's by no means like, you know.
No, it's not a knockoff. I'm saying influences.
Marcos Martin,
Colleen Coover, Marcos Martin, and also there was someone here.
I would say Bruce Timm too. When I see the action shots, that's big. I mean, that's like Kirby action shots.
Also, the artist on Pretty Deadly. Emma Rios. The way she draws her Spider Woman reminds me, or her Black Cat reminds me a lot of Emma Rios.
But the story here is pretty simple. I mean, it's basically just Silk trying to define her life, just sort of figure out where she fits in.
I don't know if people know who Silk is, but the quick explanation is she was a girl who, unbeknownst until recently, was bitten by the same radioactive spider that gave Peter Parker his powers.
Yeah.
Right. And then instead of going out in the world, Ezekiel locked her in a vault to keep her away from the Inheritors, which is why she brought it during the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Right.
And
but now she's having lost, like, you know, a decade with the sliding times scale or whatever it's supposed
to be. So she doesn't know where her family went, and that's part of it. She's looking for that. She's working at the Daily Bugle.
Yep. What's she doing at the Daily Bugle?
She's a reporter, I guess.
She's actually doing, like, articles about Silk, because that's the only thing she knows about it.
Very Peter Parker.
Yes. And she's fighting a new villain. Black Cat is involved, but I actually think this is really just all about her and sort of where she fits in the world. And
it feels,
I kind of like the voice of her. Like she's been shown, and like Dan Slott has shown her in every other instance, she's very unsure of herself and she doesn't quite fit in. So I like how the writer was able to continue on.
She's also very snarky and sarcastic.
She is very much so. I think just it's a, you know.
Can we make up a word called snarcastic?
Snarktastic?
Snarkastic.
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 I think this reminds me a lot of Batgirl, both in the look and the vibe of it trying to be sort of a younger take. And a sort of a more indie take on superheroes.
Yeah.
And I think people who like the new Batgirl would really like this book.
I agree. So I definitely say check it out.
The other thing I'll say is early on, I wasn't sure about the art. Like the first few pages, I was like, oh, I don't know, this might be a little too plain, a little too exaggerated. And then as it went on, I'm like, oh no, this is really good art and I was wrong.
Yeah, I noticed that, you know, that sort of Bruce Timm, you know, Kirby by way of Bruce Timm action in some of the early scenes somewhat gives way to, during the conversational scenes, to a more, I don't know, I guess I'd say nuanced kind of style. You know, something that I can almost weirdly see, like, working on a Bendis talking
book. Right.
I hugely love the way she draws expressions. Because they're so expressive.
Yeah. Sort of like an animator's skill at it.
Yeah, it's sort of like Kevin Maguire or Amanda Connor, how they're sort of able to make a scene just with a little bit better with a very good expression. This person has that same skill.
Indeed. Yeah.
So speaking of Batgirl, Dave.
Right. Thanks for giving it away, Randy.
Sorry.
My pick is a series that we've recommended a few times before. This is the latest issue of Batgirl.
The penultimate issue of the first story arc, I bet.
That seems about right.
Number 39.
Yeah. And what, you know, same creative team it's had. Cameron Stewart and Brendan Fletcher on writing. Babs Tarr on the art over Cameron Stewart's breakdowns. So what fascinated me about this issue is that it's actually sort of acknowledges some of the questions people have had about what seemed like sort of a soft reboot of the character.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at times Barbara's felt a little more immature and snarky, which I've mostly just tallied up to, this is just kind of a new direction they've chosen.
Yep.
But there is an acknowledgement that something strange is amiss here. She's got some gaps in her memory.
Which she shouldn't, because they've made a big point of her photographic memory.
Right. I'm trying to think, what all else, the other clues are. Oh, she was like talking to her new boyfriend, and he's kind of casually mentioning things. She's like, I never told him about that.
Yeah.
You know, so this mystery has been building. It seems clear that this has been building from the beginning.
Yeah, but we hadn't really noticed it.
Yeah, I hadn't quite realized that it was building up to this. I just thought, just a new direction.
Yeah.
Now, I don't really want to quite say where they leave it, other than next issue could be a game changer. It could be something big is going to be revealed in the next issue.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is, it's going to be pretty big.
Possibly something that Nick has a crazy theory about that we can't tell you about, but he's wrong, and I wish we could get it on record.
I'm totally right. It'll be on record. It's on record. I won't deny it, I said.
As always, I really think this is maybe the best-looking book on the market right now. Just looking at a page like this, I never know quite, you know, I guess most of it is Babs Tarr, but the layouts from Cameron Stewart are really strong. I love his character designs, or her character designs. And the again, as we've talked about, the sort of use of tech of the era, you know, whether it's social media or smartphones and everything like that.
It is a smartly designed book. I mean, the art is gorgeous. You know, flabbergasting sometimes how good it is.
She does also, there's a really cool sequence where I'm going to just sort of say part of what happens. She's going to infiltrate a building. She blazes at it in her motorcycle, like hits some boosters, is rocketing up the side of the building and like leaps off her motorcycle to fire her like bat grappling hook gun thing to go the rest of the way.
Yeah.
It is just a cool action sequence, and I dig the infiltration purely visual infiltration sequence that follows that. So half of my draw to this book is just purely visual to me, but I am enjoying the kind of fresh new take on the character, and I am interested, if a little bit wary, to see where they're going to take it. I like the new direction, and I don't feel like they need to sort of apologize for it or backslide. But whatever they're going to do does seem like it's been in the works from the beginning, so I don't think it's really backsliding.
No, it's definitely part of the plan, I think.
Yeah, but we shall see. I think in some way, a lot will be riding on the next issue.
Yeah.
Another good issue of Batgirl.
All right, so other stuff on the reading list. Dave, is there anything else sitting on your list?
You know, I put up the stuff that I was going to be looking at, so the only thing I have here is the final issue of She-Hulk, which I just read.
Yep.
And
Number 12.
Yeah, I think we had some somewhat mixed feelings on the big reveal about what do they call it? The blue file.
It felt a little rushed.
It maybe felt a little rushed, but there was also a lot of stuff I liked in it. I still love Javier Pulido's artwork.
Yeah.
I like that the flashback was clearly to an 80s era, like about 85, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Photon, a.k.a. Monica Rambeau, has her classic look. You know, She-Hulk has her... It's Tigra. There's use of a sort of a rather obscure character.
Rather obscure.
I was talking with our coworker Amanda earlier, and she reminded us that when this character was name dropped in the previous issue, we were like, "Well, we think they might have just made the character up for this." And she's like, she looked it up, and she's like, "No, it's
wait. We didn't say that. I had no part of this."
Oh, that was her allegation.
Anyway. I knew Night Watches was a non-existent character.
Oh, okay. Maybe I said it. Maybe Mix. Maybe probably Mix said it. No,
I don't even remember this conversation.
Yeah, anyway, I believe this is a conversation that never happened.
Maybe it's a conversation that happened with her boyfriend. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, she's like, "I looked him up, and he's like a D-lister." Blah blah blah. Anyway. Point is, he is super D-list. I did not remember him other than he looked kind of familiar, and I was like, is that a Marvel's answer to Spawn?
He's their Spawn ripoff, and that's what he was.
Is that really what he
was?
Yes,
he was Spawn. He was their Spawn ripoff.
Oh, that was an intentional
thing.
Yeah,
that's intentional.
I mean, that doesn't play into this particular story.
No.
But visually, you can see it, of course.
Well, because he showed up earlier in the run. He was in an issue during the run.
Of this one?
Yes.
Of She-Hulk. I honestly forgot it.
Yeah, he was notably in one of the issues of She-Hulk.
Okay. That makes sense. That would be, you know, the lead, you know, setting up what's going on.
Yeah.
Anyway, not a wholly satisfying ending, but not bad either. Still really gonna miss the book.
Yeah.
And still looking forward to picking up all the collections.
Honestly, I kind of would prefer it to go on a slightly disappointing note so that I'm like, oh, well, it's probably good they ended it when they did. Because if it was a really great ending, I'd be like, oh, man. So this is better for me. It's like, it's good. But not so good that I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to live without this book.
You're a weird man. Randy
I am Lander. A weird person.
All right, so that's all I've got. What else y'all got?
Nick, what else is on your list?
I have a new issue of Multiversity.
That is also has our out-of-context panel of the week on our Instagram, if you go look.
And to summarize it, we call it the Nazi alternate universe.
Yep.
Yeah, because this is the Mastermen issue, and it is about what you'd expect.
It's also, it's got Jim Lee art.
It does have Jim Lee art.
It's pretty notable, and I, in fact, imagine some people will be checking it out, if only for that.
And I actually thought it was pretty good Jim Lee art, to be honest. I thought it was really good. So what else?
I also have Batman and Robin.
Another homage to the original Action Comics.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. You know, everybody's seen the original Action Comics cover where Superman's smashing the bad guy's car. Here, Damian Wayne, who we freshly superpowered after his resurrection, is trashing the Batmobile, at least for the sake of the cover.
Yeah. Remember how Superman's thing used to be going around wrecking people's cars?
Yes.
I wish they'd get back to that.
Yeah, that's a new direction that could really save the character.
Yeah, Alfred is just running on the cover.
Oh, he's in the place of the freaking out thug.
Yeah.
But there's some great stuff. Tomasi and Gleason are just doing a lot of fun things. This even has Bruce and Damian going fishing, which I thought was a lot of fun. also, newest issue of Rumble.
Still know what it's about?
I have not read it.
Like
but
it?
But I would assume.
Yep.
The fourth issue of All New Captain America, which I'm excited to read. It has Armadillo Attack on the cover.
I love Armadillo.
Armadillo's a great character.
You know, I like Armadillo. I'm always disappointed if people use him as a joke character.
It looks pretty straightforward here, actually.
You know, I was flipping through it, and the fight looked pretty serious in it, although there might be some laughs.
You know, I'm flipping through this, and then I have a... People who make Marvel Legends make a Serpent Society. I totally want.
You know, I'll say this
that
about
would totally sell to us.
I'll say this about Armadillo though. Even when introduced, he was kind of a sad sack. He was never meant to be a real threat.
Right. I just don't like when people just like overplay him, or he's just a punchline.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, you can tell a story about a sad sack villain.
Yeah.
And the last one on my list is the fantasy book from Image called Rain.
That's R-E-Y-N.
Their second issue. I really liked the first one. I thought it had a great sense of humor, and I thought the art was very, very pretty. The second one I have not read, but the art is just as gorgeous. So,
that's on my list to check out.
I am very anxious
to
read
it. I like fantasy.
Fantasy
crap.
Is sort of on a return road with Birthright and Rain and a couple other books.
Yep. The Image is bringing it back. Rat Queens, of course.
Rat Queens.
They're bringing sexy back.
They're bringing fantasy back.
Yeah. Dark Horse is reprinting ElfQuest.
Yeah.
That's true.
Image has a couple new books this week. One of them is Secret Identities, which is by Jay Farber, who is doing Copperhead and Graveyard Shift right now, and previously did Noble Causes, which was sort of a superhero soap opera. He's joined by Brian Joynes, who's a guy who's done some other... He did Seven Guys of Justice, which was a superhero parody. So this is one, and it's got art by Ilias Kyriakos.
My favorite.
Really nice. It's pretty good. So this is one that opens with this big, huge superhero slugfest, and I was reading the first few pages, and I'm like, okay, nothing here that I'm interested in. And then they bring a new guy into the team, and then they spend the next, like, the rest of the book dealing with the sort of the rest of the characters and dealing with their secret identities, where one of them has, like, he's a speedster, and he has two families.
Huh.
One of them is sort of...
Like he's using his super speed to deceive both of them?
Yes, yeah. Oh, their Batman analog looks like he might be a vampire. Their Spider-Man type is doing stand-up comedy and not very well. It's everybody sort of has these secrets and lies in their secret identity. And then their headquarters is a desiccated giant monster that they live inside of that, like, his antibodies are still alive and they serve as sort of servants. So they're, like, they're using this as their headquarters, which I thought was a neat idea.
Somebody's been reading Grant Morrison or Warren Ellis.
There's a lot of interesting – it's a darker book because it's got a twist at the end as to what it's about.
That sounds appealing, though. I want to check that out.
The thing that worried me is I thought the beginning of it was too generic superhero, and I hope they don't go back in that direction. I hope they mostly stick with the behind the scenes of superheroes.
It
kind
seems
of thing.
Like that might have been maybe like just a slightly false step, as they were like, "Well, let's begin traditionally, and then we'll go behind the curtain."
Yeah, yeah, but it's really interesting, and there's a lot of neat little ideas in there, so definitely worth a look. There's a new Pathfinder book, Pathfinder Origins, which is going to give the origins of their iconic characters. Starting in this issue with Valoros the Fighter and Amiri their Barbarian. It's a good little story. It is written by Eric Mona, who is one of the lead developers at Pathfinder, and is a pretty good book if you've been liking the Pathfinder books. Miss Marvel starts a new... Actually, it's a new story arc. It's a one-off that pits her against Loki with a guest arc by Elmo Bondoc, who has pretty nice art. I believe Nick likes it even better than Adrian Alfona's stuff.
I do.
And is a fun take on Loki, and if you like the Tom Hiddleston Loki and like Miss Marvel, you'll like this book. It's fun. And then, of course, there is a new issue of Storm, number 8, which continues the story they've been doing in the back half of this book about...
I forgot Storm came out this week. I need to read that.
Yeah, corrupt senator and an evil arms-dealing corporation that's framed her for bringing down a plane... continues. It looks like that may be sort of the second arc of the book. The first arc was all single-issue stories. This is a continuing story. Third issue of Image's Bitch Planet, which I love. Guest art by Dallas local Robert Wilson IV, who we hope to have down here for a signing sometime this summer. And then the first Storm paperback collecting the first 6 issues, which I'm very happy picking up. Which reminds me, there's another collected edition this week.
All right, we got to mention the DC, the New Frontier hardcover.
Yes.
The first sort of affordably priced version that takes the, $75 or whatever is...
This one's 50.
That's 50.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you were saying that the other one was affordably
no,
priced.
No, I'm like, saying...
Y'all's Absolute Editions that you own are not affordable.
Yeah, no, and those were well over $75.
Yeah. Anyway, so $50 is a lot, but it is a big...
It's like 12 double-sized issues. They were 48-page issues.
Actually, it's 13 because it includes one issue that is not included in our Absolute Editions.
But to finish my initial thought, though, initially New Frontier was broken into two trade paperback volumes, and this is the first... relatively affordable version that you can get of both of them in one big pack. I can't remember, is it oversized?
It is, it's gigantic. Well, oh, you mean like print size?
Yeah.
I think it's mostly comic book size.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if is there extra stuff in it?
I don't know if the extras from Absolute are in there, but I know that one thing, like Nick says, it has the extra 13th issue they did extra stories.
It wasn't actually in the Absolute.
So this is, for people who don't know, it's a sort of an alternate universe where it picks up right after the end of the sort of heroic age where there's no powers, like Challenge of the Unknown and those guys, and World War II.
It's set in the Cold War.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. It covers a span of time primarily set in, like, I would say the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. So Superman and Wonder Woman were both World War II heroes, and they're the sort of the vanguard of the current heroes, but then brings in Hal Jordan, brings in The Flash.
Martian Manhunter
gets
and
a big thing.
And it focus on the sort of the twilight of sort of the non-powered heroes, like the Challengers of the Unknown.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, I take that back. It's not their Twilight, though. They formed the Silver Age.
Yeah.
So it's really just, it's all the Silver Age heroes from powered to non-powered.
Yeah, it's very much a 60s period piece of superheroes.
Yeah. There's a sort of the vibe of Kennedy's enthusiasm, you know, juxtaposed with a sort of a scary mystery unfolding. And some occasionally slightly darker turns in there.
Yeah.
Remind me a little bit of James Robinson's The Golden Age.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was, you know, it's something we would all readily recommend.
Yeah, I love this book. And it's got Darwin Cook's amazing art, and he wrote it. And, yeah, it's really, really good.
Some of those characters, you know, like the sort of Hal Jordan as test pilot or crew cut Barry Allen, you know, kind of the version we think of. Really function best in their era, in the era that they were created.
Yeah.
And he clearly has a ball writing him. Like his Hal Jordan is a great character to watch.
Yeah.
And I don't normally think of Hal Jordan, I hate to say this, as a great character.
No, I don't either.
I like Hal well enough, but he's just kind of a cocky pilot.
Yeah.
But here he's kind of a cocky pilot with 60s style.
Yeah.
You know, and he, you know, he is much more watchable than I've seen him in ever.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree.
Anything else we got?
No, that about wraps up Comics Talk for the week. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about some TV stuff. All right, so we're talking... John Oliver has just started season 2 of his show.
Yep.
And we weren't sure if we talked about it before.
But I felt like we should throw a shout out.
Yeah.
Nothing else, because he's had some great segments lately.
Yep.
The one that just aired was a particular standout.
Yes.
Interestingly, I don't tend to catch I don't have HBO.
No.
But this stuff is always on, like, what, Hulu?
No, YouTube.
Or YouTube, yeah.
HBO has gone out of their way to make this very viral. So there's, like, they usually take usually one or two of the segments, and they usually do two or three.
Yeah.
So it's like you get a good 50% of the show at least on YouTube.
Yeah, and I always feel like I'm getting like the best stuff, sort of.
You're missing some of the good stuff.
That's
but
true.
But they put good stuff up there.
Full episodes.
Yeah.
But so he did a takedown of the tobacco industry last night or within the last couple nights.
Yeah.
And everybody I think knows the tobacco industry is pretty creepy and corrupt. But what he brings to the table is a level of reporting that, you know, this is obviously somewhat in the model of The Daily Show.
Yeah.
But it is a level of sort of in-depth reporting and investigation that The Daily Show never aspired to.
No.
And that really sets it apart. And I'm watching this, and my jaw is kind of on the floor at some of the stuff he's uncovered.
Yeah.
Which are, you know, like, tobacco industry, like, suing tiny countries
to
enforce their advertising on them because they cannot afford to go up against a company who's makes more in a year, like three times as much in a year as their entire GDP.
Or the Australian court decision that allowed them to change packaging, and then the cigarette companies found a loophole in a 1983 trade agreement, and then they outsourced themselves to Hong Kong so they could take advantage of that. It is diabolical.
Right. It's like real supervillain kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like on some level, I'm like, I can vaguely admire the hideousness of it.
Yeah.
But as exposed by John Oliver, it is also as the Daily Show at its best is hilarious.
Oh, that's the thing. Yeah. It's not just horrifying. It is. I was crying laughing, especially at their. They're making good use of Twitter and social media.
Yes.
They created a hashtag and a new mascot for them, Jeff the Disease Lung.
Yes.
And I saw that trending before I even watched the show. It's like it's out there.
Yep.
And it's sort of it's almost like a 21st century sort of response to corporate tactics. It's like a
– Right. He's attacking them in a way that they're not prepared for.
Yeah.
And in the sort of democratized media means of social media.
Yeah.
And he's done that several times. He's used social media
to
notable effect before. So this I don't know if I have anything else in particular to say other than you need to check this show
out. It's a perfect blend of absurdist comedy and social responsibility. It's really amazing that they're serving two masters. They're being hilariously funny and also doing better investigative journalism than most anyone else is doing right now.
Right. And then one small thing that another advantage it has over Daily Show is just that it's uncensored.
Yeah,
you know, John Stewart can say anything he wants, and they'll
but it gets beeped. Yeah,
it has a little more teeth when John Oliver can just outright say it.
Yeah,
so my highest possible recommendation.
Yeah, it was. It's really good. The other thing, the other segment they did this week and put up on YouTube was the. Something they do occasionally called "How Is This Still a Thing?"
Oh, I saw that, but I haven't watched this one yet.
And it was the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue.
It's sort of like a little 5-minute rant.
It sort of deconstructs what these things that are like sort of outdated institutions and the sexism that is so prevalent in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue and why on earth in a world where you can Google naked people.
Right. Yeah, I assume that was a big part of it too. Like, how do they do that? How powerful must their PR be to make this still a thing?
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And it's really funny. So definitely recommended.
What else we got?
So Nick, you saw Kingsman this weekend.
I did see Kingsman.
And, you liked?
I did. I liked it. As you both know, I'm not a huge Mark Millar fan.
Yep.
This movie borrows its namesake and a rough estimate of story from the book called Secret Service.
The Secret Service,
which has been, I think, rebranded as Kingsman, the Secret Service.
Yeah. But the main draw for me for this is I like spies. I think everyone likes spies.
Yep.
Love Colin Firth.
Yep.
And I like
the trailer. I could see this was pretty over-the-top spy stuff.
It is over-the-top spy stuff. It is sort of a more gadgety.
It's not like a comedy, though, is it?
Oh, no, it's a comedy.
Like that's what it is at its core?
For the most part, it's a spy comedy.
Okay.
It's not parody comedy, though, right? It's more of like an action comedy.
It's action comedy. It's goofy at times.
And, yeah.
What would it compare to?
I mean, I'm not saying it's Naked Gun.
Get Smart, even?
No, it's not even that. It
takes it some more seriously than that, I think. It looks like.
A little bit. I mean, I wouldn't go...
The Kingsmen are supposed to be badasses, not fumbling buffoons.
Correct.
Okay.
They're not... But, you know, there is a sense of humor that comes with it.
Yeah.
And it's just really good. Colin Firth is a fantastic lead character, and he plays sort of the old hat of the spy industry, and it's all about sort of a new recruit that... you know, he brings into this and sort of they start going through a training session. And, of course, Samuel Jackson is the villain. And
seems to be chewing scenery with the best of them.
He does, as always. He chews the scenery.
I assume that the training stuff has to be kind of part of the fun, too.
Right? It is.
Training,
it's a big part of it, and it is a lot
training
of...
in a larger-than-life spy verse seems like...
Well, there's a sequence that they've shown on maybe even in the trailers where, like, all these trainees wake up and the room is flooding and they have to bust their way out of their room.
Uh-huh.
And I think one of the actors that sort of steals the entire movie for me, at least, is Mark Strong, who I've liked in a lot of.
Oh yeah, I didn't know he was in this.
He is sort of their training handler,
The
guy who does all the training, and he's hilarious and sort of deadpan and. But I mean, you have all
the staples. Like the equivalent of Starship Troopers, medic.
Kind of. I mean,
is that Clancy Brown?
Yeah, Clancy Brown.
But I mean, this thing is just packed with. Actors. I mean, Mark Hamill, Samuel Jackson, Michael Caine, all these people sort of show up, these old hats at, you know, British spy stuff, and I dug it. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yep. And along a similar vein, we all watched the trailer for Man from U.N.C.L.E. this week.
Right.
Guy Ritchie's new movie.
Yep. It's a spin on the old TV show, which isn't super well known, but I've always known of it just kind of by name and reputation as a tongue-in-cheek spy.
I knew the name, and that is all. And it's a 1964 thing.
Have you ever seen it?
I've seen bits and pieces of it, and I knew... I only watched it because I liked one of the actors. He actually played a reoccurring character on NCIS. The guy who plays the Russian in the original. I'm blanking on his name.
Right. So that's like...
And Robert Vaughn plays the American. And this is what we didn't know. It's a United Nations team, and they try to stop evil all over the world, and it's Robert... And this is the height of the Cold War, 1964.
Yep.
Robert Vaughn plays an American spy, and the other guy is a Russian spy, and they're working together, and that's sort of the odd couple-y mix thing.
I know that, like, you know, with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, you know, that's not unheard of, and, you know, Bond had teamed with, well, probably Russian femme fatale, at the very least.
Yep.
But yeah, it is kind of impressive. I'm like, that was the era when they were our enemy.
This also apparently was the foundation for S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. I asked around, and apparently this is well known, that Stanley basically acknowledged the creation of the Marvel Comics S.H.I.E.L.D. They operate out of a tailor shop, which is a nod to the barbershop, sort of a nod to that. The United Nations backing them. He basically ripped off S.H.I.E.L.D. from Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah.
Which is not surprising. Stanley did a lot of that kind of riffing on pop culture.
Ian Fleming helped make Man from U.N.C.L.E., so Ian Fleming helped make S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, that's kind of funny. But anyway, they did a trailer for the new movie, which is Henry Cavill.
Yep.
You might know Superman. And he's playing the American. And the Russian is played by...
Forget his name, but...
Is Lone Ranger.
Lone Ranger,
Hammer. Hammer.
Yep. Oh, okay. Like Guy Ritchie's previous Sherlock Holmes movies...
Yeah.
It exudes style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also looks super fun.
Yeah.
Like super fun.
Yeah. It looks like they're doing very much the period piece. Stylish, fun, nice use of music.
Even though, you know, it is clearly a tongue-in-cheek spy movie.
Yeah.
You know, that's not completely tongue-in-cheek,
right.
But is somewhat tongue-in-cheek. It doesn't look like it's a ton of cliches we've seen.
The action looks great.
It felt like its own thing.
Yeah.
From the trailers.
Yeah.
Like it was staking out some new territory. And it's interesting that between this and Kingsman, there seems to be a little bit of a return to maybe some like lighter spy stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember just reading an article just recently where like Daniel Craig kind of acknowledged he's like that for a time, Austin Powers killed Bond.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, he's like, it killed the Bond movies. And I guess that's why when they came back, it was like so deadly serious.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think that's a bad thing. They did a great job with
the deadly serious ones. Yeah, they did. I like the serious Bond.
But it is kind of nice to see that the reins being eased back a little bit on it.
Well, especially the period piece stuff. Like, you know, it feels like the 60s was a good era for spying.
Yeah. It's weird. Sometimes dark times, and that was a truly scary time for people I know. You know, there were real nukes and real angry countries staring at each other with them.
Yesterday was my day off, so I was kind of channel hopping through things, and True Lies showed up, and I'm like, this is sort of that era.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. Fun spying.
And it's got, you know, the action all looks great. I mean,
The Mission Impossible movies, Ghost Protocol was a really fun
spy movie. That's true.
And I think that's what we're looking for, is a little more fun in our spies. And I think that's cool. I mean, would you guys say Grayson, the DC comic, is in this ballpark?
This sort of brings me to sort of one of the things I wanted to mention is just a tangent. There's a genre that I guess I can't say I'm really that familiar with it. I just know of it, that they call spy-fi.
Yeah.
From the 60s stuff where it was that like heightened, you know, lots of gadgetry and like some, like maybe some even borderline supernatural elements. And it was stuff like the British, the Avengers show, but also like The Prisoner.
Yeah.
And Grayson, from what I read of it, I felt like had some of that surrealism. You know, it stemmed from some of Grant Morrison's concepts.
Yeah, sure.
With the agency spiral. And it has heavy sci-fi. So I feel like it's just as influenced by that, like something maybe like the Avengers or maybe Man from U.N.C.L.E. I don't know,
right?
As it is by James Bond, which is always the kind of obvious action spy influence,
right?
But I kind of want to throw myself into some of that stuff in the next few months. Maybe watch some. I've seen the Avengers before and I like it, but I kind of like watching it in small doses.
Yeah.
But I've never seen The Prisoner, and that's one of those ones.
You should watch the '90s Avengers movie.
No, you shouldn't. No one should. No
Why
one should.
Why would you even bring that up, Nick? You've just killed everything.
I have a fondness for that movie.
I really wanted to like it.
I did too.
I liked the back and forth between Emma Thurman and Ralph Fiennes.
Uma Thurman. You know what's funny is, having watched a little bit of the original show, it's not particularly far from it.
Yeah.
I think there's just something, there was sort of something magic about the original cast, and maybe just that it was of that era.
Yeah.
That sort of flippant, completely, that British attitude that, you know, everything was just, well, let's see about taking down these fellows then.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, nothing is taken too seriously, and everything was dryly humorous. That just didn't, maybe because the movie, you know, a big budget movie always feels kind of overwrought, a little forced. Yeah. Maybe that's why it didn't quite work. But I have to admit, it's pretty similar to the old show.
Yeah. Yeah, it just didn't quite translate.
Yeah. Unless you're Nick, in which case it translated.
So finally, I want to talk about a game that I played that it's late because it's done. It was won Game of the Year awards and everything. It was last year's game. But I played the Fables game Wolf Among Us from Telltale Games.
Yep. They of the popular Walking Dead game and the recent Game of Thrones game, which I've heard about and sounds super awesome.
I've decided that I mostly just want to buy these games when they're done. Because apparently there's some controversy about the Tales from the Borderlands one, that it's like, there's only done Chapter 1, and now they're on a Game of Thrones, and some of their fans are like, why isn't there more of this one? And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to wait until the usually five parts.
Right, they really release them. It's like downloadable games that you get in over the
little episodes,
like
one
every month, or every few weeks.
Several months, depending on the game, okay. Yeah.
Is this just fans being whiny?
Yeah, it's just fans being whiny.
People, yeah.
But I prefer being able to play the whole thing, because I played the first chapter and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And it's based on the Fables series, but it's a prequel. And it's got some Fables that I never would have thought they would have used. I don't want to name too many of them, but characters I'm like, oh, I'm kind of surprised these guys didn't show up in the 150-issue comics run.
Yeah, you were telling me about it. And you know, there are a lot of Fables and folk tale characters. Yeah. And, you know, I imagine there were just some that he just never quite got around to whatever story he might have used.
But they bring in some urban legends, too. But it's like, there's characters I'm like, you know, these are big enough that I'm kind of surprised they didn't make the cut for the Fables book. But I'm glad they didn't, because they work really well here. But he also, there are a lot of nods to, you see a lot of the main characters. Of course, Jack shows up. Flycatcher shows up.
Uh-huh.
Bufkin the Monkey is in there in a lot. Mm-hmm. The main characters are Bigby and Snow, and there's a lot of Bigby and Snow. And you're playing Bigby Wolf.
Which is pretty cool. I mean, you know, whenever I see one of these new games from Telltale, it always occurs to me that there's so much they could do with them. You know, if you were to do a Star Trek game or an X-Men game, even more, you know, you were telling me about an action sequence in it, which I don't want to talk too much about. But, you know, you kind of get to do some of Bigby's really cool stuff in it sounds like. And these are action sequences that are not like so much like Twitch action game style first-person shooter.
It's more like the boss fights in, say, Arkham Asylum, where something will happen and you have to push a button to block in a certain amount of time.
Right.
Or push the stick to dodge.
You know, just what I saw of the Walking Dead one was pretty engaging stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's got tension,
It's a whole kind of new way to depict action in a very strong story framework.
You get much more invested in these characters because you're making story choices for a lot of points. It's definitely it's a story game first. It's where you're making – it's almost a choose-your-own-adventure style where you're making dialogue choices, and that will direct how things change later on down the road. But
and I think part of their magic is just sort of that polish they seem to have. The dialogue is always above average.
Yeah, it feels like – this feels like the world of Fables. The voice casting was great.
That's what I was going to ask you about.
The voice casting is really good. It's not actors you know. They have a studio that they use,
Hear Big B and think, that is not at all how I pictured Big B.
No, they nailed Bigby, and that's really important.
Nice.
It's got some twists and turns. Despite it being a prequel, you don't know everything that's going to happen. In fact, them bringing in some of the new characters means that there's a lot of uncertainty.
Right. Will these guys live or die?
And I really loved it so much so that I was going to play like one chapter a night, and I wound up sitting down and playing chapter two, and then I just kept playing until I was done. I was so wrapped up in it that I stayed up a little too late doing it because I was so wrapped up in the story. So definitely worth looking at. I think I got it downloaded digitally on the PlayStation Store for like $25. It's really affordable. They're like $5 an episode, so it's a good deal. And
I'd say right now there's at least there's some of their earlier ventures. It was clear. I think the Walking Dead one was a watershed game.
Yeah, that was their big breakout.
That was when they figured out their format. But that the Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, and Fable. Wait, is it Fable or Fable?
Wolf Among Us.
Yeah, Fable's Wolf Among Us seem to be, and any one of those that sounds appealing to you would probably be worth checking out.
Yeah, and they're doing more. They've picked up other licenses. I don't remember exactly what, but they've got a bunch of licenses that they're going to be doing. So they're always doing more stories. So definitely worth checking out.
Can you do a Doctor Who one?
That would be great. Actually, I think that'd make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, I believe that wraps it up for us this week. Stay tuned next week for our 50th episode, grand surprise, super That's edition.
Right. There will be magic tricks, fires, fireworks, and a bear.
Sure. And until that time,
Yo, Joe!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Rogues Gallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.